This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, and, of course, the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. That's what we do every single Thursday in the 9 o'clock hour. We bring on my boys from MGO Blog, starting off with the man who started it all over on the MGO Blogosphere, Brian Cook. Brian, how you feeling this week?
Good.
There you go. There you go. Love it. Love that Brian Cook is feeling better. We have Seth Fisher in with us as well. Seth, how are you?
I'm great. I'm a little tired because basketball on top of UFR means no sleep, but I'll take it because we got some basketball last night.
Welcome to my world, Seth Fisher. Craig Ross, how are you this morning, my friend?
I'm fine. Just call me Mr. Apologist for Big Ten referees.
Which is, John O'Neill would disagree.
Yeah.
I didn't know John O'Neill's name before Craig Ross. So at any rate, let's dive in because we got so much to cover this morning. Just real quick takes. I don't think we need a bunch of dissection of beating Indiana, right? Is you need to take care of your business with a bounce back effort. They went out and took care of business there, Brian Cook.
Yes. Commercials are out of control. That's my only take from the Indiana game.
That's about the best summary you need right there.
Seth, your takeaway?
What are we doing in this game at 7:30 at night? Like, I can definitely sit through a long Fox game with lots of commercials on a beautiful Saturday afternoon.
Shut up. No, shut up. They had a commercial and then nothing happened and there was another commercial. Like, it's a new record because there was no plays and there were two commercials. It's not even kickoff commercial. It's nothing.
It's the only game I've ever been at where I heard the fans booing commercials. Like, I've never heard that before. And it was so out of control in this game that a great crowd, all things considered for Michigan, right? A terrific crowd. They were like, What the hell is this? Another damn commercial? And you heard the boos raining down.
There were a lot of people leaving when it was like 20-7 in the third quarter. Because it was
done at 20-7 in the third quarter.
Right.
I mean, there was nothing. There was no football left to play. Indiana had given up.
And, you know, by the fourth quarter, they had run out of things to do in commercial breaks. Like, there's no more guys catching punts and, like, band stuff. It was just the DJ trying to figure out anything he hadn't already played in the game. He had to play the Doobie Brothers because there were so many commercials.
Can I make a suggestion when they have this situation, because I know it's going to come up again, try playing nothing. Try just letting the fans, like, talk to each other for a minute, and, like, that could be fine too. We don't actually need you filling all the space. Like, just try doing nothing.
Good luck with that, Seth.
I'm a minority view in this. I thought, why are they playing this game at 7:30 in the middle of November? But then the crowd showed up. I thought the fans were pretty good, all things considered.
Really? I thought that was incredibly dead. It felt like a Mac game.
It felt like a dance party broke out at a football game. Now, our section was dancing. There was a lot of dancing in our section. And so which was fine. And, you know,
I mean, but is a crowd on a chilly November night for Indiana? I mean, is it even possible for that crowd to be raucous?
Well, it's like I'd never been in Michigan Stadium for a night game, and it felt like, let's just get this over with from the jump. Like, that's
part of that was Indiana.
Yeah, part of that was
why is Indiana at night? Because it makes no sense.
I agree with that.
I agree it made no sense. But it actually was kind of a fun environment. Now, I would change the music because I don't like the music they play, but on the other hand
says nothing to me about my life.
And
we don't need anybody not on board at this one, okay? We don't need any SRs jumping in and being like, no Mensheviks on this one, okay? It is time for a revolution. We need everybody on board.
Okay. I mean, Seth, you couldn't be more right.
This does not sum up the Indiana game, right? I mean, it's like there was never any doubt. I did a breakdown with Vance Bedford, and he was like, who the hell is coaching that team? It's like, this game, the offensive game plan was terrible. And this is coming from Vance Bedford, who did not want to call out John Donovan from the Washington's offensive coordinator, who got thoroughly just taken apart in that game.
Wait, he'll call out one of our own guys? That was Nick Sheridan calling that.
Right. And he was like, man, what is going on?
Well, to be fair, they're down to their third string quarterback.
Yes.
Their starting running back went out after about two carries. So there wasn't anything that they could do.
His thing in the game was, you know, the things that bother Michigan, from tempo to to motion and formation, that maybe they were just so depleted that they had to keep it super simple for the personnel they had out there. And he said, that's a tough place to be in.
One thing I want to ask Brian and Seth, I noticed in this game that Indiana ran 100%. I'm pretty sure it's 100% of their run plays to the boundary.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I noticed that in charting. Yeah, well, because the other side, it had Michael Barrett. So Michigan went back to the Don Brown defense.
Yeah.
Like, they went back, they had an anchor, they had Mike Morris at anchor, or Taylor Upshaw at anchor, and then they had Michael Barrett out there. Michael Barrett was just taking away the slot. And that side of the defense also has a safety. So now that side was overloaded. And Michigan was basically gambling that, hey, you know, if you want to run to the other side, you can run into Aiden Hutchinson all day, help yourself.
Yeah.
And so what Indiana did is they put everybody to the boundary, or they put receivers to the boundary, and put Aiden Hutchinson in like a run pass and basically just threw to the flats. That's the only thing they had, was throwing to the flats. It looked like a screen game, but it wasn't really screens.
And it was always the boundary. I mean, there were a couple plays to the field that were scrambles or improvisations, but this was a team that never played the field at all. They played the boundary 100%, and I've never seen anything like it. And maybe it made sense, I don't know.
Yeah, it's because of the way Michigan aligned. Michigan was putting Hutchinson to the boundary, and therefore they were going to play their game against Hutchinson, because the last thing they wanted to do is have blocking Hutchinson be part of the offensive plan, because their tackles, their left tackle was okay. The right tackle was just another disaster. The only lineman I think I liked from that is Carpenter, unfortunately.
Yeah, you don't want to block Hutchinson. You choose to try to block Dave Ajabo, who all of a sudden is number 10 on Mel Kiper's big board.
Boy, Michigan's going to lose both their defensive ends next year, it looks like, because Ajabo looks pretty much like he's going in the first round.
Yeah, it does look that way. So we've gotten through the Indiana game, right? All right, so Penn State is up. The Nittany Lions, as we've talked about all week, you start out the season, they go to Wisconsin and get that victory. Just like Michigan did, that victories for both look a lot more impressive when you look at how Wisconsin is doing now, right? They come home, they take out Auburn, but then, you know, things get they get injuries, things start to go down, and they lose to Illinois. So a lot of folks, nationally, have sort of put a little heat on James Franklin. I'm curious what you guys think of this team. Why can't they run the football? What kind of, you know, where do they fit relative to what your expectations were for them heading into the season? We'll start with you, Craig. What do you make of this matchup?
Yeah. First of all, I think Mustafa being out
is huge.
Is huge for them, because he truly is an excellent player and was one of the better players in the Big Ten. And so that's hurt them. But I don't quite understand why they have no run game. I mean, and I haven't seen them enough to really know, but it seems like their run game has been pretty inert. And I know also Clifford has been hurt. Whether he's really healthy right now is a question I've got. But I mean, but when you score 18 points against Illinois in 9 overtimes or whatever, I think it was 9, wasn't it?
And that was Clifford's first game back from injury. So I mean, I don't think he's 100% now, but he's certainly better off now than he was in that game.
And now Illinois' defense has improved, and you have to give Bielema, you know, some credit there that he seems to have pieced together something that's competent. But I still don't understand why, you know, what's going on with Penn State. And I haven't watched them enough to really know, except to know that their offense is not what we expected. I mean, they do have a great, I mean, the wide receiver's phenomenal. I mean, he's probably one of the best two or three wide receivers in the Big Ten. I think he's a first round pick projection. Dotson, is that his name?
Yeah, John Dotson.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, along with David Bell, I mean, he's probably one of the two top receivers in the Big Ten. But I guess Wilson maybe at Ohio State. But I don't know. Have you guys watched Penn State enough to have some instinct about what their problems are?
Well, their offensive line is butt.
Yeah,
that's like their number one problem.
That is great analysis right there.
So, I mean, their only semblance of a run game came when they were able to have Clifford even up the numbers. And since he went out against Iowa, he came back, of course. But, I mean, he has a total of like negative 50 rushing yards since his return. So he is just – they're not making him a mobile quarterback anymore. He's a pocket passer until such time as that he's completely healthy, which I don't know if that's going to happen this week. Kind of feels like the likelihood of that is low since he's obviously compromised in some way, and he didn't run at all against Maryland. He didn't run at all against Ohio State. So if this is the week where he's suddenly healthy, like that seems unlikely.
But he's been a pretty good runner. Well, to
Brian's point, so I pulled up the stats. I mean, he had one game, the Villanova game, for some reason was one where he got sacked a lot. I don't know. I didn't see that game. He got sacked 3 times, had -8 yards rushing. But in all the other games prior to the injury, he was positive in the rushing yards. He had 66 against Ball State, 58 in the Indiana game, 36 against Iowa. But since then, -28, -11, -12, and not at all a coincidence. These have been his biggest sack games of the season. So he got sacked 4 times against Illinois, sacked 4 times against Ohio State, sacked 3 times against Maryland. And up to that point, the only game where he had been sacked 3 times was that Villanova game. 3 games this season, he had been sacked at all. So clearly he is not quite back.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When Clifford is a run threat, you can't pass rush him like you know, remember how like with Denard, the defensive ends would always just kind of stop? Like they don't want to actually approach because you have to just kind of squeeze him in. You can't just go after that guy because he's going to jump around you and then he's gone. And that was Clifford. A very, very good runner normally. So that used to be the way you play him. Now the defensive ends can go after him. It brings the fact that they have bad offensive tackles to bear. And Rasheed Walker, their left tackle, I thought was one of the best run blockers in the Big Ten last year, and he has gone way down. I don't know if he's hurt, but he's missing his targetings all the time, and he's never been that good of a pass protector. He's kind of slow. He doesn't really see things very well. I think their coaching on the offensive line is a major problem. They were screwing around with the guards in the center. They're trying to move Juice Scruggs, their right guard, to center, and Mike Miranda back out to guard. That didn't work, and they moved them back. So like they've been really messing around on the offensive line, and it's kind of the James Franklin program that like they recruit great players. They have they have better recruiting classes than Michigan, and all these guys have stars. You know, for 4-star guys, and then, you know, in the positions where that really matters, they're strong. Like cornerback, they're really strong. Like John Dotson's Parker Washington's a good receiver. They have good running backs. I like Noah Kane as a running back, even though they can't get him going. But then places where you have to develop guys, they're really lacking.
Yeah, would you? I know off the if you haven't watched them at all, you might think this would be a tough team to run against, but. You look at them here. How many yards did Illinois rush for?
Like 300.
300. So
they were all QB sneaks.
So you feel like while ordinarily you would say Michigan probably can't tee off on these guys, maybe they can.
Well, I mean, you look at who they played and what their rush defense has done. Like Maryland does not run the ball at all. like they just don't even try. So that like so the rush defense looks okay against that team, but they got absolutely stomped by Illinois after Mustafa goes out. And like, where did that come from? Like Illinois isn't a team that. So there have been times when they've had good rushing games over the past decade, but this really isn't it. And then, you know, Travion Henderson goes for 5.4 yards a carry for Ohio State. Like, I think this is a game where Michigan probably just can keep it on the ground for most of the afternoon and really pound this team into dust. And then defensively, like, if Clifford is the version of Clifford we've gotten the last few weeks, like, I don't see how they're going to, like, move the ball except slot phase to Jahan Dotson, right? Like, which they're going to get some. They're going to, Michigan has been exposed that that's a weakness again. So, you know, I think that they're going to just put it up to him and hope that he can make some stuff work. But this isn't a team that has the kind of ground game that seems particularly threatening for Michigan. And when they do get in long yarded situations, you have a probably immobile quarterback and some wonky offensive tackles going up against Aiden Hutchins and David Ojabo. So, yeah, I mean, I think Penn State's favored in this game.
I haven't seen the line.
I think the line has been moving around a pick, and I think the last I saw, Michigan was a 1.5 favorite. But I think that line has moved both
weird
ways.
Weird things happen in Happy Valley all the time. But, like, Michigan doesn't want to throw the ball if they don't have to. This is a team where you mostly want to run the ball inside the tackles because Mustafa's out and their linebackers are, you know, easily blockable, I should say. And then their pass defense is incredible. So, like, there's no reason to pass against these guys, and you can probably play, like, that Washington game all over again.
But they're not going to be as passive defensively and keep like two safeties back. They're going to get after it and try to outnumber Michigan. And that might work. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, teams aren't static, right? So they had their come to Jesus moment against Illinois, and they're going to fix a lot of that stuff. And so Michigan is going to have to look at not just what they did, but what their potential responses are going to be. So it's going to be a game where, you know, Michigan is going to have opportunities downfield because I think Juwan Brisker is going to be in the box a lot.
Brisker is a safety.
He's a safety.
He's really good. He's an excellent player.
And so, like, if you just look at these two teams, Penn State is going to load the box. And so Michigan's going to either have to option some guys off or get some misdirection going or put it up. And, you know, it's going to be a night game. It's going to be a noon game. So at least there's that. But, a road game. I don't know. I look at these two teams and I figure that Michigan should win this pretty easily. But then, you know, Vegas has Michigan -1. So
weird things happen in Happy Valley.
Yes. We've been there for some of them.
Especially when I think our offense is a little, there's been all this discussion about Gattis in UFRs on the comments and whatnot. And Michigan's offense this year seems disjointed sometimes. Like, I thought the Michigan State game plan was not very good. Indiana didn't really matter. And we've had a lot of games where, like, it just doesn't matter. Like, I don't care what they do against Northwestern, they're going to win. But this is another game where you're going up against a live defense. As Brian mentions, they're going to bring Brisker down. They're going to try to do things to stop what you want to do. So they want to continue doing what they want to do. They have to have some answers for that. My hope is that we've got some things planned, that, like, we bring back some of the options in the game, this game. We don't run that no read option that we just use to set downs on fire all the time. So, I mean, that's one of the things that's making me nervous right now, is that our offensive coordinating seems disjointed at best.
I disagree. I disagree 100% with that. I think my issue with, I don't even know if I'm going to call it an issue. I guess that my biggest critique or criticism has been QB usage and QB usage in the red zone. I think that they've caught plays that are there consistently with guys open. And how do you realize more of that potential? And I think that the answer to that in the red zone is more J.J. McCarthy. Now, the thing that you didn't do earlier in the season was, you know, get him more seasoning. So some of the young mistakes that we saw him make in the game against Indiana, that some of those mistakes weren't gotten out of the way earlier. But I think if you want to realize the full potential of this offense, then having a guy who gives you more options in the red zone, I think can help you do that. Not to make him the red zone quarterback. I'm not suggesting that, but certainly increased usage in that area of the field, I think.
So after the Indiana game, I was even more on Team Cade, even in the red zone. Because, I mean, JJ wasn't just making freshman mistakes. He was making bad mistakes. And McNamara was not only functional. I mean, he scored twice on passes to Schoonmaker in the red zone. And we're talking about, I think I'm mostly talking about run game, and you're talking mostly passing game. And I think our passing game makes sense. I think our passing game is fine, and Cade's getting much better. And that's one of the things that came through again. He had another great game. So that's two in a row now.
I don't think he had a great game. I think he had a solid game. And I think that two touchdowns were absolutely would have been there if he does not. On one, he gets hit. JJ got hit with Cornelius Johnson running wide open in the corner.
Yeah.
The other one that would have been a touchdown was they ran the same play, that same play pass off a counter that would have been open, but instead of having Andre Anthony run it, they gave him a different look. They ran it with a tight end. And so you had a tight end, you know, running that corner. And it was, I mean, if you look at the route, I mean, he bent it so far inside that when JJ went to look to it, the dude wasn't in the end zone. Yeah. And so he wound up having to throw it in the flat. But you have those options when he's on the field. And I just don't think that they're as available with Cade.
Well, one thing's for sure is that both in the Indiana game and more so in the Michigan State game, our red zone offense has been pretty terrible. I mean, we gained 893 yards against Michigan State, but we flopped in the red zone, and it was much the same this week against Indiana. I can't
really get behind dumping on Josh Gattis after putting up 550 yards against Michigan State. That's the actual number. Come on, man. Like, how many yards did Michigan leave on the field?
A ton. I said after that game that there were 500 yards through the air. I mean, and he had a good game. Make no mistake, because I go back and forth with Devin. I said, Devin, now let's not make it sound like Cade had a bad game. Because Devin does commentary like he coaches, right? So I get it. I was like, okay, he had a good game. At the same time, he wasn't wrong about all the yardage that was left on the field, and that played out the next week when Aiden O'Connell throws for how many yards? 536 yards. It's the last ranked pass defense in the country, and those plays were there. So my point is to realize more of that. You're close to the optimal mix. I think they are getting – Cade's getting better. I thought Cade's deep ball in this game, he threw his best deep ball of the season. You liked him on the waggle, looked good on that. Hit Schoonmaker on a stick route. That was a great read that he made on that play. So you saw some good things. But to squeeze out a little more efficiency, I just think that the young fella, especially in the red zone, I think he's more accurate on the fade ball, fade balls and jump balls. He gives you some more mobility down there as well. That's a chess piece that I think you got to utilize more. And it's not an either or. You can use them both. They have been to nice effect. I think a little more of that is in if you want to beat Ohio State. I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? What beats Ohio State? I don't think that this mix beats Ohio State, the one that they have right now. I think they could get there, though.
Well, the quarterback usage is not my main thing. I did notice they used a lot more zone stretch against Indiana, and that's something – A, that pairs a lot better with the power game that they have because it punishes that edge in the way that Indiana has and Michigan State kind of showed them how to attack Michigan's power edge. So I think adding that element, they've needed something. It's going on all early in the season about how split zone doesn't work for them because they don't read the backside end, right? They don't have a zone read game, so you can't rerun split zone as your base. Stretch zone actually works with that. And you know, Vastardis seems born for that. Like, that's exactly what he's good at. Hayes got the athleticism to do that. That's something really nice to see, that if Michigan can, you know, get better at hitting the cutback lanes on that.
And it puts the waggle play back into as a weapon. And that's a play that is easy for the quarterback to read.
So I haven't asked this, and we got to get to a break. Ira's giving me the break frantically. Mm-hmm. You got to believe that they are not as efficient at that in practice because they don't run stretch a lot. And so you got to make a decision on what you're going to emphasize.
Yeah, you can only do so much.
Yeah. You can't run all that and be great at it all. So what do you think your line is best suited to do? They've clearly made the choice or the decision that they think they're best when they can get downhill, inside zone, power schemes, and then play off of that.
Power and stretch work well together. I would dump the inside zone. They're terrible at it.
That's not going to happen, though. That's not going to happen. We got to get to a break. Be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider at Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Take.
You guys heard the rumors that Gattis is in line for the Virginia Tech job?
I saw that on their board.
On the Virginia Tech board?
I saw that on the Virginia Tech board. Yeah. I haven't heard anything.
Apparently he has a relationship with the AD.
Yeah. I saw that. I mean, you know, you wonder how much his star is, you know, going to be tethered by the, I mean, Michigan's offense is okay, yeah, but it's not setting the world on fire. And so will that sort of depress what he, what the appeal is for him? Because I think you can't tell how good his calls have been from the results on the football field. Because I'm telling you, you look back at from the what is it, the Wisconsin game on, mm-hmm, dude, I mean, it's been virtuoso in some games in the past game. There have been touchdowns left on the field, left and right. That doesn't get you hired someplace. So the touchdowns you could have had don't get you hired some other places. So
I keep arguing this point because, you know, no one ever talks about how Joe Moorhead called a great game and his players didn't execute. Like, your job is to go out and have an offense that your players are good at and know what you can do well, and then, you know,
well, so,
make things easy on them. Not like, hey, I had this great play that we never can get right.
But wait a minute. Hold on, man. So if you got guys running on a basic dig route open or a basic post and they're open, that's not, you can't do more than get guys.
Well, you mentioned like, you know, when he's got a tight end running out there, that's Joel Honigfirk. You take Joel Honigfirk, who was a good sixth lineman, turn him into a tight end who has received one target in the passing game all season, and you expect him to go out and run a route. He runs his route right into another receiver, and then two guys aren't open because of it. That's offensive coordinating. That's part of it. Like, how are you using your pieces?
What else is offensive coordinating? So you get in a game, and to your point, your quarterback can't complete a pass, and you devise a game plan on the fly that plows it down the throat of a pretty good defense.
I was singing Gattis's praises that week when everyone was mad that we ran the ball 100 times, and I was like, yes, that was the right call, and that was using his players correctly, and like, his players looked great because they did that.
You talk about the Michigan State game. And dude, I mean, I'm telling you again, there are basic dig routes. And it puts me in a position of making it sound like I know,
and we agree more than we disagree on. We're not. Yeah,
but you can only scheme guys so wide open. And this is why I say the criticism is, if you want to realize more of that, especially in the red zone, I think you have some capability that you have to uncover with the young fella. There's the cost of that is he's going to do things. Now, if you want to be critical, 3rd and 18, putting JJ in the game. That's like, okay, all right.
I wasn't critical about that because McNamara was hurt, and that was and Indiana draws up pressures really well. So I was like, yeah, take the starter out. Like, we're not going to need a 3rd and 18 in this situation to beat Indiana.
Or a zone read with Kate. I mean, so it's not like you're
just don't run it.
It's not like you're batting 1,000, but man, when you look at what they were as a rush offense last year versus what they are as a rush offense this year, I think they're markedly better. I think they're much more competent up front. I think they play to their strengths. And then why do you do inside zone and power schemes? Because yeah, Hayes is athletic, and you like Vestardis. He's a little more mobile than you thought, but man, you know, some of the other guys, whether they're maybe not as mobile or not as good on the move with hitting targets on a stretch, mm-hmm. a combination of the two maybe makes you feel like I'm better when I'm more focused on, you know, brute strength, power, nailing the guy in front of you. And I think that's the reason.
I'm not saying stretch zone should be their base. Yep. Yeah. I want it to be the secondary thing, because they're not good at split zone and they don't read the backside edge.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side. So the news came out this week. I got to get you guys' take on it. Michigan ahead of Michigan State in the playoff rankings. A lot of media members like, oh, how can you do this? What gives? How can Michigan be ahead of a team that they just lost to? You look at Michigan State, though, they go down just like we said. I don't know how many of you guys picked it, but I know we were saying, hey, Purdue's going to clip them because they have no pass defense to speak of. We saw that on display. The committee's argument was Michigan is a more complete team. I think you can factor in that the Big Ten has since admitted that there were officiating errors in that game against Michigan State that obviously impacted it. What do you make of where the Wolverines sit in the rankings in light of the loss to Michigan State?
Well, it's meaningless, but on the one hand, because in the end, it's all playing out. But on the other hand, you get it. I mean, when they're saying Michigan State is a less complete team, well, they're last in the country, last in pass defense. So it's not a big jump to say another team that isn't last in pass defense in the country might be more complete. Michigan did lose to them.
I mean, so I don't think that Michigan should be ranked in front of Michigan State, but I think it's close. And so the thing is that when they talk about Michigan being a more complete team, I mean, if you look at advanced stats and stuff, you can see that a little bit. Like they're fifth in ESPN's fancy rankings, and Michigan State's 22nd. ESPN has a game control thing, and Michigan's third in that, and Michigan State's 16th. But they shouldn't be looking at any of that stuff. None of that should matter. Style points should not matter. I mean, I guess you got to have style points for things like Cincinnati and all that stuff. But when you're talking about two Big Ten teams, it's just about who they played and who they beat. And, you know, if you look at most of the resume rankings, which is just who you beat, Michigan State is a hair in front of Michigan. And so I think that should be the only consideration. Strength of record. That's it.
I would have no problem if Michigan State was a spot ahead of Michigan. Wouldn't bother me. Doesn't bother me that Michigan's a spot ahead of Michigan State, because in the end,
I think it's funny as hell.
Yeah, you're right for that reason. But beyond that, I just don't see it's very. This is particularly meaningful. I mean, Michigan State goes out and beats Ohio State, and we beat Penn State. My guess is they jump us
over under on CJ Stroud throwing for 600 yards.
I'll go under because he's not going to play the fourth quarter.
They say Mel is taking a hands-on approach to the defense. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that does. They are bad, 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 bad on the back end. You think about Aiden O'Connell and the game he had, and he overthrew a guy wide open in the end zone. It could have been worse than it was. 536 yards. And the guy was as good as he was in that game. I've never.
All right, we gotta stop talking about Michigan State and talk about.
Yeah, I hear you. I Michigan never basketball. Never thought of him being a dude. And look at how he did. So it'll work itself out on the football
field. I just want to say that if you know, I'm way too biased in this situation. So if these playoff committee experts looked at Michigan and Michigan State and watched that game and saw how
Gary
that game Parta. Played out,
Gary Parta.
And this
Gary
is what
Parta.
They think, who am I to argue? Now let's talk about basketball.
and look, this is why I think for Jim Harbaugh to come out publicly and reveal that the Big Ten made an admission about the officiating errors. This is why I think it's functional. This is why I think it goes beyond sour grapes. I think this is part of what you do to promote your team, to help your team for considerations like this.
Yeah, I mean, the Big Ten should have come out. It borders on the cowardly to the obscene for Harbaugh to have to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Big Ten basketball underway. We saw the Wolverines get a test last night from, if you weren't paying attention, then you didn't know that Buffalo is favored to win the MAC. You didn't know that Buffalo was the number one recruiting team or the rebounding team in the country. And you certainly didn't know that they're going to come in and try to punk you the way that they came in and tried to punk Michigan last night. Tim McCormick, he said, hey, this is going to be a tight game. Michigan's only going to win this game by five or fewer. So that they won by double digits was really encouraging to me there, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, the guy last night, Jonathan Williams, just really went off, made a lot of shots that a really good player you would expect to make and a lot of good shots that you would expect no one to make. And he made them all and played a phenomenal game. But the player of the game to me was Terrence Williams. Jonathan Williams had 28 points, I think, midway through the third or the second half when they switched Terrence Williams over onto him and finished with 32. So he had 4 points down the stretch on two circus shots. And Terrence also shored up our rebounding against a really good rebounding team. He made rebounds in traffic and hard rebounds. He put up 15 points in addition. He was the guy for Michigan in this game, and nobody was talking about him, understandably, because he's sort of a hard player to
everybody was talking about him.
You were?
The whole offseason talk was like, yeah, Terrence Williams is coming.
Really?
Yeah, that's what everybody said in the offseason, is that Williams is a total
changed his body shape. He was making his threes and practices on the super secret scrimmage that they had that wasn't super secret at all. Williams has been, I mean, he came off the bench in this game, so obviously, you know, you could say that he was a little secret guy, but he's kind of taking on that Sean D role of Michigan's sixth man, where like he's just, you know, a part of that program. And they really needed him last night, because I thought that they had, especially when they went with the two bigs lineup, they were having trouble at the perimeter. Caleb Houston seems to be, at least at this point in his career, more of a four, I think, than a three, at least, you know, as far as who he can guard. And so then you have like all these bigs out there, and they're kind of having a hard time staying in front of Jonathan Williams. And then you put Terrence Williams out there, and he brings that energy, and he's just getting in his face, and he causes the guy to travel and get a flop call. Like that was like the moment where everything just stopped being like irksome and then went back to being, okay, Michigan's got this.
Yeah, the disappointing part of the game to me was Michigan controlled this game early. They were up, I think, 42-21 or 41-21, one of those.
They were up by 24.
At 24, one okay, more than that even. And then, I don't know what happened. Something happened, and maybe one of you guys can put your finger on it, but they played poorly at the beginning of the second half. They played poorly at the end of the first half. But they did pull it back at the end of the game. Hunter certainly had a big game, had the one great move around on the baseline that when they overplayed his left hand, which was heartening. I'm not sure if Musa and Hunter can play together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure about that one yet.
They're trying. That's something that they've been working on here of late. Phil talked about that this morning. Yeah. So, it has potential. I mean, I was impressed with Moose's sort of court vision. I mean, he assisted on a couple of threes, and who did he hit? Someone he hit in down the court. Anyway, I thought that he was.
Yeah, three assists to go with two blocks. So that's that's a big deal. Yeah, he can. I mean, Moose is a basketball player, and will play in the NBA someday. That's for sure. But the question I've got is, can they sort of fit him in together on this front court with Hunter, or is he strictly a five? I'm not quite sure yet.
I mean, it's not strictly a five. You're going to give up some stuff offensively, I think, when they're both on the court, but having him at the four is going to be lethal defensively, so you'll just make up for it. They can play together for 10 minutes a game or whatever. It's not a big deal. I mean, the answer to like what Buffalo did is that Jonathan Williams went 10 of 14 in the mid-range, right? Like, and most of those shots were like, all right, I'm going to live with that. And it's like, oh, come on.
Right. They were hard.
So, I mean, he had a great game, and I think that that was fortunate. On the other hand, Buffalo was 5 of 28 from 3, and they had better looks than that. So, you know, I think this was about a fair result when you kind of even those two things out. And, you know, Michigan gets the rim. They're 15 of 16 at the rim. And that's something that I think you were going to see going in because their two centers were just stiffs, right? But the rest of that team can play. Like, Segu can play, Williams can play, and Mbala can play. Like, that's a team that, you know, if they were going up against half the Big Ten today, I'd be like, I'm picking Buffalo.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're a mid-level Big Ten team, that's for sure. And they're going to be in the NCAA tournament, and they're going to give somebody trouble in the NCAA tournament because they are physical and they go to the boards. And so they are a good team.
So one thing that they were doing is they were hedging a lot, which was weird because they were a totally drop coverage team last year. And there was seemingly no reason to pick this team to really hedge against. So I think they're going to try to diversify what they do because they had a lot of issues against teams like Ohio State, you know, stretch five kind of teams. So that was interesting to see. Mm-hmm. And I think, and one reason that you're doing that is because you have Musa Diabate on the team. Because if there is a situation where like EJ Liddell is going off or a Wisconsin big is going off, yeah, you can put Hunter on the bench for a little bit and just have Musa eat everything up and switch everything. So that seemed like something that was more pitched towards the future than right now.
Yeah, that's a good point, and that's well plausible. Incidentally, I don't know if you noticed, Ohio State won at the buzzer against Akron at 67-66, and they needed a last second shot to win that game. And Akron is not Buffalo.
No, and they might not be good. So one thing that you kind of look at this game is that, you know, they started Justin Arnes and Jamari Wheeler. Mm-hmm. Those are two really limited offensive players. Mm-hmm. You know, Arnes can hit threes, but he's not really going to do much else. And Wheeler is just a defensive pest. And so neither of those guys hits a two. And Michi Johnson doesn't hit a two either. That's a tough way to live because they're also starting Zed Key. So Liddell's playing the four. You have a non-stretch big, and you have two really limited guys in your backcourt. I mean, they had a real hard time finding offense in this game, and I don't know if that's going to change.
Did you guys see Michigan State Kansas? I watched that game.
Kansas isn't good, guys.
Kansas didn't have Jalen Wilson.
Yeah, hurt them.
But you know, I thought the Kansas backcourt pretty much demolished Michigan State.
Remy Martin,
and the other
kid, Remy Martin,
and he's a transfer from Arizona State, but he really hurt Michigan State, and the other guy killed them, Ojabo or something like that, and a lot of points. So the State, you know, Izzo had his tee, got his, you know, first game, first technical, also yelled at a couple of his guys on the sideline. So, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to let Marcus Beeman shoot like that.
Yeah, I mean, he shot some threes, I think.
That's what I mean.
Those were ugly.
I still don't understand how that guy is only getting 18 minutes. Like, what are your alternatives? Like, you're going to throw Julius Marble out there so he can get ruthlessly dunked on? I mean, I don't know. I'm surprised. I also like that Matty Sissoko got 2 minutes in this game. He was ranked ahead of Hunter Dickinson. They were like next to each other in the rankings, and what's going on with that?
Yeah.
He seems like the AJ Hogarth guy.
Hogarth did not have a bad game.
He didn't, but I just think that one of the keys to their success is the guy from Northeastern. Tyson Walker.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Like Hogarth couldn't shoot at all last year.
He shot it okay in this game.
So he gets to the bucket in this one a little bit, but if you can just keep him away from the basket, like, it's game over, really. I think. I mean, it's like a low sample size thing, but, you know, he was 60% from the line. He hit like 3 of 18 threes. Like, guys do get better especially after their freshman year. But it feels like that seems unsustainable. And the fact that they did start Walker, they expected him to be the better player. Kind of like if Hogard can keep that up, it's great for them. But that feels like a stretch.
Yeah, yeah, transfer guards take a little while to get acclimated anyway. Like Hogard's been in that system for a while. And you know, I think that of all the spots at Michigan State, I'm the least concerned that the transfer point guard is going to be better than he was in game one.
Well, what did you guys think of Devontae Jones last night? I mean,
it's hard to tell. He wasn't on the floor that long.
Yeah.
He had 18 minutes, but he was in foul trouble. I mean, obviously, he's going to steal. He's going to get steals. And I liked a lot of what I saw. I have no idea if he can shoot the ball. I don't know if he shot it last night, except at the rim. But did you have any?
He missed a front end of a 1-1, which was part of the problem late too.
We were 18 of 30 from the free throw line, and we missed the front end of 2 or 3 1-1s, maybe at least. So our free throw shooting,
I think it was 3 of
as
them,
much
yeah.
as anything was.
Yeah, but that dude's like a career 85% 3-point shooter. So yeah. I mean, free throw shooter. So he'll be fine there. Yeah, it was tough to tell. Like he took that floater, but he got fouled on it. I was like, I wanted to see the floater because that's something that he is superb at. 5 assists, 1 turnover against a defense with some length and a step up from what he saw at Coastal Carolina for the most part. I thought, except for the fouls, he was a guy who looked like he fit the bill. Yeah. So, he was relatively controlled on offense. He was a little bit too aggressive on defense. That's going to happen. I mean, he was 18th in the country in steal rate last year, right? So there's a cost to that, and we saw it in this game. I think it'll tone itself down. Also, we have to say that the refereeing in this game was strict. So
Toronto set a record for double technicals, right?
I'm sure they did. I had never seen anything like that before, and I know that Buffalo is a team that does a lot of woofing, but come on, like, what are we doing here? We're just slapping people. I mean, if that didn't actually slap people with personals, that's one thing, but it does. So you're just randomly changing the game because somebody's like saying, I scored points, hooray. Come on, let's play some basketball.
Jones, like, I think he's further along than Smith was at this point as far as seeing the offense, which was really good to see because I was expecting kind of a transition cost and a lot more turnovers early in the season like we saw last year. And you can see that there's still somewhere to go. Like, he saw it like maybe a millisecond too late where he had an opportunity to get the ball to Hunter for a dunk, and it just kind of rolls behind Hunter's knee because he's just a little bit too late on that one. And, like, give it a few games, and he's going to see that just a little bit earlier. And, I mean, man, like, when he's got that floater game and he can make passes like that down low with our front court, that's going to be something special, especially because as soon as they try to crash down, I mean, Hunter, he rolled off his good shoulder, right? Like, they went right after his left shoulder, and he spun around baseline and dunked that in, and it's like, okay, that's solved, right? Now that's not a problem anymore. Then you got Caleb Houston out there that you can kick it out to, and obviously Brooks. And, Michigan is built really well, I think. And as soon as Devontae Jones is seeing that a little bit faster, this offense could really take off.
All right, so we are up against it. Michigan, Penn State, winner on the football field. Because they obviously have a couple coming up on the ice. But Michigan, Penn State, Craig, winner score.
Michigan 24-13.
Seth?
Michigan 20-19.
And Brian Cook.
7-2 and 5-3 on Friday.
What about tonight?
I mean, tonight, 7-2.
7-2 and 5-3. Oh, yeah. I thought you were giving that as a football score. Because you can do something like that. What do you think about the football score, Brian?
7-2.
All right. I got you. Exactly. All right, folks. That'll do it for us here